This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Well, I'm coming to you from beautiful, glorious Clearwater, Florida, and we are having a lovely day here, and all of my relatives up north who didn't come down for the holiday season are now sorry because it is freezing in Michigan, and they have negative 21 degrees. I don't know how they can stand it. I couldn't take it anymore. I was very happy on Tuesday that I had we had our regular visit, monthly visit from our legal eagle, who answered many of the questions that you've sent in to me. And one of them that he also mentioned was that he gets this question asked when he talks to writers groups: how do you pass on your rights to your family or to whomever you want to give your rights to once you pass away? Well, it is something that a copyright lasts for, as he explained last, Bill Larson explained it, lasts for 100 years. So it is something that you have to take into consideration when you are making your will or if you decide to make a trust, which is probably the best way to pass on your rights to your books. Now, one of the things that you might want to mention in your trust is if you want your books to actually continue on. Not just the books that you've written, but books that you haven't even written. Much like Tom Clancy's family decided, and of course he was behind the idea that he wanted to keep his books going many years after he was gone. And so he set up, he started working with a wonderful author named Mark Greeney. And Mark just had the right sense of style and just appreciated. He was, of course, so actually a hero worshiper of Tom Clancy. So to be able to work with Tom during the last years of his life and really get to know the characters that we all have learned to love over the years. And so Mark has brought to the new books that he's writing for under the name of Tom Clancy with by Mark Greeney, they are very in tune with what I think Tom Clancy would have wanted. They talked over where Tom wanted the characters to go, and so I was very, very pleased when I read this most recent book, which is called Tom Clancy, True Faith and Allegiance, and it's just an exciting book. So I want to go to that interview in a few minutes. But first, I want to remind everyone that Bill Larson does give a free consultation. And anytime you have a legal question, just send it in to me at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And I will ask him when he comes in to talk to us. And he's always happy to give a, you know, just to meet with you and start you on your way the right way when you're dealing with your legal rights, because you never know. And I am very happy to report that several of our writers in our area are doing so well. They're progressing on to major literary agents and to be published by very substantial companies. And they have a bright future, and they have to make sure that they protect everything that they're doing. So it's just fun that we have a legal eagle on staff here at Joy on Paper. And one other thing, after I finish talking to Mark Greeney, I want to talk a little bit today about poetry. It's very interesting that there is a resurgence of people who are reading poetry. And I'm happy to report, I want to talk about a poet who managed to jump that barrier that is there for all poets and make a real impact and get a publishing deal. So I want to talk about that today. And then coming up in January, I have a wonderful guest, and that's really where the poetry came in mind, and so I'll talk more about that. But what I'm going to do is take a quick little break, and then we're going to come and talk to Mark.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm on with my guest, Mark Greeny, who is a man who can wear two hats. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. How are you?
Well, great. I'm so happy to have you on. As I was saying, you're one of those authors who wears two hats. You are a best-selling author on your own with your own fantastic series, The Gray Man. And, of course, you have been keeping the legend alive, Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan stories in this new book, True Faith and Allegiance. Wow, you've done a terrific job.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Well, it's coming out just at the right time of year. Absolutely perfect gift for Christmas. For anyone who loves Jack Ryan and just wants to keep up with the family and all of the characters that Tom, of course, created and that you have so brilliantly continued.
Yeah, I imagine there's a reason that it comes out at Christmas. I think that's probably a publishing decision. This is my fourth since Tom passed away, and I did three with Tom before he died, so this is number seven for me. So this feels like I'm getting pretty comfortable at it.
Well, it is an absolutely wonderful yearly gift to people to be able to jump back into all of the adventures of Jack Ryan and all of the characters that have been developed over the years. And, of course, I think, you know, it's always difficult. So many writers are now, they are carrying on after they're gone. They have somebody carrying on their books. And it's not always successful. But I think in your case, of course, one of the reasons is you're a great writer. But you also had the great opportunity of working with him for, three books while he was alive?
Yeah. And yeah, so, that definitely helped me a lot.
So you actually had all that chance to talk to him about the characters and to really get to know them. So,
yeah, and it even goes back. I was just the biggest Tom Clancy fan starting in the 80s. So I really, you know, that helped me get the job in the first place to co-author with him. But I felt like I'd learned a lot from him reading his novels over the years. But then just to meet him and to collaborate on the three books was an additional plus.
Well, it's a wonderful opportunity to work with the, you know, such a master storyteller and then to learn from him as you have. But of course, on your own, you are a brilliant writer. We're going to have you back on just to talk about your Gray Man series because they are action filled. And I can see why Tom wanted to work with you because he found a fellow person, author, who wanted really to get into the action, and you certainly do.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I was lucky to get the opportunity, but I, you know, by the time I did get the opportunity, my own writing was very much affected by Tom's writing because I was a big reader, so it definitely, you know, steered me in this direction for sure.
Well, I knew that True Faith and Allegiance was a great book because my husband grabbed the book when it arrived, and he read the first chapter. And usually at that point, he'll, you know, move it over to me and say, okay, you know, I'll read it after you finish. And this time he wouldn't hand it back to me. He said it starts off with action and it continues. And, you know, for the next little while, I had to play back and forth. Whenever he would stop reading to do something else, I would run and read. And then he'd come back and grab the book out of my hand because it's a nonstop. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much. Yeah, this was definitely the most realistic book I've done, and it just became the most action-packed of all the novels just because of the type of story it is. I mean, there's just a lot going on, and it's a lot that has to play out throughout the length of the story. The reader learns different things, as the story goes on, but there's just a lot of action at every turn. And I don't know that I thought about it that much building it. Sometimes when I write a book, you'll go back and you'll look at it and you'll say, like, that middle third gets a little bit draggy. We need to move some action, you know, that happens later in the book a little back earlier. There's this kind of rebuilding of the story. But this book was just very naturally action-packed.
Well, tell us a little bit about the story. Now, of course, by this point in time, Jack Ryan is the president of the United States. And mm-hmm. Lots of things are happening. Now, of course, we get Jack Ryan Jr., is involved in the book too, and I think he has now become a beloved character. You know, we've read about him growing up through all these years, so
right.
It's just fantastic. So tell us the basic premise of the story.
Yeah, Tom Clancy did something great in 2004. He had a book called The Teeth of the Tiger, and he brought Jack Ryan Jr. into the mix. So as an analyst and an operative at an off-the-books intelligence group called The Campus. So it's really neat that the President of the United States is Jack Ryan, and the main character is POTUS, but you can't have him involved in a whole lot of action. I mean, he's getting a little bit older, and that's not really his game anymore. So bringing his son in, that way you get the big macro story at the 40,000-foot level with the president, and then you also get the street-level story with this intelligence operative. But the basic crux of the novel is you learn from literally page one that there's this massive intelligence breach that's gone across all classified holders of classified data in the U.S. government, and these people are being compromised to different enemies around the world. No one seems to be able to get a handle on how big this is and how wide it goes. But as more and more people become compromised, the president and his son both feel this very, very much a moral obligation to stop this attack and protect America's soldiers and spies and special operators and from whoever it is doing this attack. And there's, I won't spoil very much to say it's a conglomeration of bad actors who have taken some intelligence data that they stole and weaponized it so they can turn it back around against the United States.
Well, as I said, it is just nonstop, and it's so beautifully done.
Thank you so much.
My husband and I are like, okay, when we got towards the end, we really had to fight who gets to read the ending first. But, you know, of course, this takes place in a lot of different countries, including Iran. So you've had fun over the years doing all the research on all of these places, huh?
Yeah, I've done a location research on some places, not every place. I haven't been to Iran. But, you know, there's a lot of other ways you can do research on different locations. And in this book, it's Iraq and it's Central America, where I spent a lot of time. And it's Central Europe, where I spent a lot of time. And Southeast Asia, where I spent some time. And there's also a big domestic threat in this novel that takes place all over the U.S., from Florida to California to New York to Chicago to some smaller towns as well. And
well,
so, location research is a huge part of the novel, and you know, you do as much as you can in the time that you have available.
And it gives a ring of authenticity to your writing, I think,
mm-hmm.
knowing
yeah.
that
yeah.
you didn't that you've been to some of these places and have that real feel for the location.
Right, right. I think it helps the writer to come up with more ideas and just to understand the fabric of a location.
And of course, a lot of weapons in this book. tell me, now, I understand that over the years you've done some training yourself so that you could get a real hands-on feeling for weapons.
Yeah, I've done a lot. I own several of the weapons that are in the books, and certainly not the larger ones, but the, you know, small arms, rifles and pistols and things like that. And so I've done a lot of training, close quarters, combat training, shoot house stuff, and alongside law enforcement and military and special operations military and all that. And it's really helped the stories. I mean, it helps me learn about the operation of the equipment, but also the tactics, the team tactics. It's helped me with, like, the medical aspect of it, the communications, the way people talk. And then more than anything else, it's the people that I've met at various firearm schools around the country, whether they're special operations or ex-special operations people or, like I said, law enforcement, or just other people in the military, and you just meet them, and they become contacts for future books, and you learn how people talk that do these sort of things for a living, and it really does help you a great deal.
So are you good at speed-stripping a weapon?
Well, sure. Yeah, I don't think I've ever done it blindfold, like you can see people on YouTube do, but, yeah, I can speed-strip my AR-15 and my AK-47, which is a little bit easier, and my handguns, and clean them if I have to, and then put them back together.
That's part of the fun of being a writer, that you get to do all of these things that you want to use in your books, and you say, okay, well, I might as well do it myself, and that's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a huge thing. I learned how to scuba dive for one of my Gray Man books, and I've used that, and I've gone diving a good bit, and I've used that in books. On my honeymoon, I got married last year, and we rented a sailboat in the British Virgin Islands, and I used that in a book. And my wife didn't mind; it was worth it. You know, that I was sort of working while we were doing it, because it didn't impact her in a negative way at all, because she got to be on a sailboat. So you learn pretty quickly that just everything that happens in your life becomes fodder for your novels, especially when you write two big books a year. So. You know, you're wasting your time if you're doing something that doesn't involve writing.
Well, one of the scenes, of course, I very well done was the parachute scene with young Jack. Did you go that far?
I haven't.
You haven't jumped yet? Oh, you have to jump.
No,
it's fun.
Oh, you've done it.
Oh, yeah. You have to do that.
I would like to. I think I would like to. I'm sure there'll be that moment of regret right beforehand. I have a guy that I'd worked on books before who was in Delta Force, and he was a jump master, and he'd helped me with some stuff in the past, and so that helped make that real, but that is not something I've done yet, and I respect people who have, so good for you.
Yeah, well, the one thing that I would not do, and I remember it was which one of the books, Commander-in-Chief? The submarine book, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's one thing. Did you go down in a submarine?
I've been in submarines, like in dry dock or whatever, but I am 6'4", so submarines and me do not get along.
No, that's too tall.
I would be claustrophobic if we got underwater, but I don't think I'd survive long enough to submerge the submarine. I'd bump my head pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, I can jump out of an airplane, but boy, if you put me in a submarine, I would panic. I did that little submarine thing in Disney World, you know, where you go in the submarine and you're not actually very, very deep in the water. And I was like,
but you're still surrounded, right?
Surrounded. Like, and I said, yeah. That's what I always admired Clancy about, you know, Hunt for Red October. I felt claustrophobic myself all the time. I'm reading that book. But
that's what he wanted.
Oh yeah, well, of course, it's still so funny to think of him, you know, being an insurance salesman and coming out with that book. It's an amazing feat that he did.
Yeah, it's incredible. He was, you know, he was just a big researcher, and he was just a big lover of the genre, and he loved reading nonfiction about these things and playing war games and that sort of stuff. And then from that, he built a novel, and he'd studied English, but you know, that his first book came out, you know, in his mid 30s, and he was just obsessively, you know, crafted this amazing story. And the amazing thing is that he was able to do it again and again and again for, you know, 25 years.
And of course, being associated with him has helped a lot to open doors for you, I bet, for all the military things.
Oh, absolutely. I had my own contacts before I started working with Tom Clancy, but once I did, that really opened doors in a huge way. I got a letter from the Secretary of the Navy maybe a year and a half ago saying that he enjoyed one of the Tom Clancy books that I had done and said, if you ever need anything, just reach out. And so I immediately used that as a ticket and, you know, got to go to the San Diego and get on board a destroyer and, you know, do some meet some people involved with anti-submarine warfare and things like that. So any contact that I get from the Clancy world is just really top-notch, and I take good care of them.
So as you said, you do a book a year, so you're doing one book a year about with the Clancy mm-hmm. hat on, and then one book a year with your Grayman hat on.
Right, that's what I've done for the last 6 years now. Actually, 1 year I did two Clancy books, and I didn't do a Grayman book, so it hasn't been a Grayman every year, but it's been two books a year for the last 6 years.
Okay, well, that's nice and prolific.
Yeah, it's there's a certain time of the year where you're pretty worn out, but I'm glad to have done it, and I'm happy with the book. So all's well that ends well.
Well, and I'm sure that the Clancy family is very pleased with your, you know, what you have been bringing out over the years, because as I said, keeping these characters to what the public expects and to what you know, we all have our vision in when we read Clancy books, we know Jack Ryan, even though, you know, on film he's been played by different people. When you're actually reading the books, you visualize him. Everybody has their own vision of him and of the family. So you've managed to keep that flowing throughout the books.
Thank you very much. I mean, it helped to be a big fan of them, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's hard not to be a fan, because the minute, I think the minute anybody read Red October after that, wow, you can never stop reading Clancy. And, of course, you have managed mm-hmm. to keep to the length. I mean, this book is big. You know.
Yeah, there's an expectation in these books, and it's fun when you're building the story. I mean, I tell this to other authors, that there's this embarrassment of riches. You know, you're not, you know, you come up with other ideas, and, you know, you'll be in the Oval Office, and you'll be like, well, I wonder what somebody on a ship in, you know, off the coast of North Korea would think about what that decision, and it's like, well, let's just go write it and see what they would think. And so you're able to build this wide, big plot, but, you know, everything has to be there for a reason, and everything has to coalesce and sort of like weave together towards the end. That's just the Clancy hallmark, and it's something that I've wanted to continue, because as a reader, I was a huge fan of reading that sort of novel.
Well, you have, because it's not every author can get away with writing a 729-page book. You know, most publishers would say, okay, no, that's too long. But once Clancy established that length of book for himself, people feel cheated if it's not long.
Right, exactly. There's an expectation for it, and you know, it gives you the time to build the story in the way you want to do, but you're very responsible that every chapter has to have the right tension and the right action, and, you know, ask the right questions and dole out the information in the right way. So, you know, you can write a big book, but that's not enough. It has to have the right flow.
Yeah, you have
feel.
To keep it. You don't want that middle to drop off, because
exactly,
I never did with Clancy, and it certainly doesn't do with you. I know the Grayman. I don't think any of the Grayman books are so long.
They're not as long.
No, they're not as long.
No, they're getting longer, though, and I think I know why. I think it's working with Tom Clancy for 6 years. The Grayman books are getting longer and longer, and I'm starting to notice that. You know,
of course, and now the publisher will let you do it, because it's not anymore that the publisher says 100,000 words and we're cutting you off, and no matter what you want. Right.
Yeah, it's funny. My first novel, The Gray Man, that my agent, you know, this is before I was ever published, he said, you know, keep it at 100,000 words. That's a rookie mistake a lot of people make, is they turn in these big monster books that publishers are afraid to publish of somebody who's not known. So I kept it short and sweet, and then they've gotten bigger from there. But the first one was only 100,000.
Yeah, well, that's generally what happens, because until they're sure that the books are going to sell, they really keep that tight fist on you. But it's wonderful that you've been able to just keep going. And now you have, of course, it's a challenge to be able to, because the books are different. I mean, your writing in one is different from the writing in the other. So how do you sort of keep it straight in your head? You have a system?
No, I mean, this year I wrote a Gray Man novel, and the day after I finished that one, I started on True Faith and Allegiance, the Clancy novel, just because I didn't have time to, you know, ruminate and put the space between them. It is a little difficult, but I know the characters in both series, and there's sort of a different feel and tone to the books. So I'm pretty well able to tune myself in. It's just one of the travails of being a working writer is you'll be working on one manuscript, and your editor will send you the other manuscript back, you know, from the copy editor, and you've got a few days to read through the whole thing and make any changes. So you have to be able to take off one hat and pop on another hat and get into the different feel of the books. It's not that tough because, you know, they're definitely in the same genre. And the different tone actually helps. It like sort of helps stylistically. As you pick up the Gray Man book, it's going to have a little bit of an edgier tone, and that makes me, you know, just sort of approach it in a different way and look at it as a different animal than the Clancy stuff. So it's not as tough as it might seem like it would be. Like, I would probably imagine it would be harder, but it's just kind of like you have deadlines, and it doesn't matter how tough it is, the deadline doesn't change because you're having a hard time, so you just figure out a way to do it.
Well, you know, on a technical point of view, what program do you use for writing?
I just use Word. I actually tried to use Scrivener for this book, and Scrivener's great for me for outlining a little bit, but I don't do that much outlining. But once I get into writing the books, I mean, it's basically just Word, and it's just one document. So I'll have, you know, 50 different chapters going, and I don't write linearly that much, so I'll bounce around a little bit. And it's not the most organized way in the world to do it. But I haven't been successful with Scrivener so long, so far, and maybe if I took the time to really study it, I'd get better at it. But for now, I just use Word.
Because you do a lot of research. You have a lot of technical details that you have to keep track of.
Yes, I use a program called Evernote to just throw everything into any note-taking you do, including, like, handwritten notes. I'll scan them and put them in Evernote, and it'll all be under the book heading, and then I'll go back and read them, or I'll know that I saw something that relates to something in the book, and I'll just go back into Evernote, and I'll search for it, and I'll find it. So that's maybe a little more technical than you want to get with it, but that's how I work.
Oh, no, authors, you know, so many of my listeners are writing, or they're right. Hoping to write, and they're always like, they want advice. How should I do it? And it depends. You know, I think particularly Scrivener is wonderful for people who have, like fantasy writers, who have to keep track of so many different worlds or so many different aliens and characters, and also for very historical novels. It's a fantastic, absolutely fantastic for historical novels. Because you have that ability to keep track of everybody, but I can see, you know, if you're just free flowing and now, do you write from an outline? Have you outlined all of this before so you know?
Well, there is outline is like overselling what I'm doing. I mean, I write like sort of a story that tells what's going to happen. So it's just like a mini little, you know, piece, 10 pages about, you know, the novel. What's going to happen in the novel, and some areas are incredibly vague. But that, you know, that goes to my editor, and then we'll talk about it, and he'll, you know, have a suggestion, and I'll write that down. And then from there, I usually don't ever really look back at that document. You know, from there, I've sort of built it in my head, and it expands, and I don't have an outline, point-by-point outline. I mean, I will definitely sit there with a notepad while I'm eating dinner in a hotel or something like that and try and think out, you know, the next 10 things that happen that I need to work on. And so there is this like building it along the way, but it's not as organized as you have this document at the beginning that has all the, you know, all this chapters and all that sort of thing. I'd love to do that. I wish my mind worked that way, but so far it hasn't happened.
Well, I think that your book, the official title is Tom Clancy, True Faith and Allegiance, a Jack Ryan novel. Which is out in time for Christmas, and of course, it's a really great book to buy anybody as a gift. But your name, of course, is Mark Greeny, and right? I pronounced it right, Greeny.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
Do you have a website?
Yes, it's markgreenybooks.com. G R E A N E Y. books.com, and then I have all the information about the new Clancy book and my Gray Man novels and everything else going on.
Well, that's fantastic. And you have a new Gray Man book coming out, I think, on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it comes out February 14th. It's called Gunmetal Gray, and it's the sixth in my Gray Man series.
Well, I hope that you'll come back on maybe for Valentine's Day and talk about it. It's not exactly a romance.
It's not. I can't. There's no way I can twist that into, you know, as a Valentine's Day theme.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But I'd love to talk about it.
I was going to say that, yeah, it's not, doesn't, well, you know, some girls might want to buy it for as a gift because they want to encourage their boyfriends and husbands to read, and that's always a good thing. It gives you something to talk about. So we can, you know, when it comes to books, we can twist it every which way. We'll
yeah,
find
it. You just marketed the book for Valentine's. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, why not? You know, a girl has to think of what to give her guy, and I think one of the best things is to encourage you know, women to encourage their guys to read books, because it gives you something to think about and something to talk about. And of course, if the guys get to read about some of these locations where your plots take place, maybe they'll say, oh, well, let's buy a ticket for there. Hey, now that's an idea. I can combine this as a as a Valentine's gift. You know, they have to buy.
That's terrific.
Yeah,
anyone would appreciate that. Yeah,
see, I can always do something like that. Well, Mark, I think it's just, you know, always when a new book comes out, it's exciting, and I know that you're going to have a fantastic Christmas celebration over this book. I'm sure everybody, you have some book signings coming up before Christmas.
Yep. I go on the road tomorrow, and I'll be out off and on till the 16th of December, so yeah, right up until Christmas.
So how many cities are you going to?
Ooh, 7. I'm in D.C. for a couple of days. I think it's like 7 cities along the way. It's not a huge tour, but it's going to hit some good stores along the way.
And I'm sure a lot of them, you know, this is an ideal gift, actually, for anyone who has somebody in the military, anybody who has somebody overseas serving active duty. This is a great gift.
Yeah, for sure. We're actually signing at several PXs, Camp Lejeune and Fort Belvoir and Quantico up in the D.C. area. And, yeah, there's no one in the military that doesn't have a brother, an uncle, a father, a mother, a grandmother, somebody that would love a Tom Clancy book for Christmas. It's pretty stable market.
Absolutely. It's actually a perfect gift, and will make the holiday season go very fast, because you're reading this book, and it's a great book. So I want to thank you so much for being on today. And
I appreciate it. Thanks
you know,
for having me.
I'll have you back around 4th of July, around Valentine's Day, and we'll talk more about The Gray Man, because The Gray Man is a very intriguing series. Your hero there is somebody quite unusual, and I think it's quite distinctive from you know, Courtney Gentry. Your hero there is different from so many of the other action-packed thriller heroes.
He's a different play on the. He doesn't have a compass that points true north, but he has some pretty righteous operations that he does, you know, and that the readers can really get behind. And he's sort of a vexing character. Hopefully, that people find fascinating.
Well, he is. I think he's very fascinating. And so, again, Mark Greaney, author of Tom Clancy: True Faith and Allegiance, a Jack Ryan novel. Thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, because you certainly have put a lot of joy on paper, and I'm sure that you get a lot of joy out of your work. By the way, you have 2 dogs?
I do have 2 dogs, yes.
What are their names?
Lobo is a 5.5-year-old Catahoula, and Ziggy is a 1.5-year-old Catahoula.
Okay, good. Okay, well, I'm going to ask everybody the name of their dog, because I just heard that the most popular name for 2016 for a girl was Bella. So
that's that sounds like a pretty common name.
Yeah,
okay. I heard it's a dog park.
Okay, well, I thought maybe you'd name one of your dogs Putin, but you never know.
Putin.
Okay. Okay. Take care now and have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas, and we'll talk to you in February.
You do. Thanks. You too. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye. Okay, that was really nice. I so enjoyed talking to him. The Tom Clancy book is 729 pages of nonstop thriller. It brings back all the beloved characters that we all know, Jack Ryan, and now, of course, Jack Ryan Jr. And we've been following them through as Jack his family progressed in life. And so it's fun now that Jack Ryan is president and Junior is getting into a lot of action like his dad. So it's a great read and one that I highly recommend. I'm going to take a quick commercial break. And then when I come back, we're going to talk about poetry.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Larson & Larson is a proud sponsor of Joy on Paper. Our law firm has the experience and knowledge to help you protect your valuable intellectual property. From trademark, copyright, and patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements, the attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, are here to advise you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com. That's Larson & Larson, your intellectual property attorneys.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back, and I want to talk a little bit about poetry today. You know, all of the writers that I speak to, you know, over the years, I've asked them what has influenced their writing, and many of them had responded that reading poetry helps them to understand the use of language, and it is really a fascinating, if you're not into poetry and you think you don't like it, it's wonderful to go back and to see why certain poems have lasted over the centuries and what's happening in the poetry world. Now, I was very thrilled to hear, you know, poets don't often get big book deals. So when they do get a nice book deal, it's wonderful to applaud them and to talk about their success. And one is Amanda Lovelace. She wrote a book. She wrote a book of poetry called "The Princess Saves Herself." In this one, this was self-published, and now she was very clever, and she's been a clever writer over the years of jumping into the new media formats. And this is very important. We talk always about platforms, and she was very active, and she realized early on that in order to develop a platform and get a name for herself, she would have to be writing not just her poetry, but blogs. So she became a big blogger, and then she moved on to do Tumblr, got really involved in Tumblr, made a real community effort to identify not just people who like poetry, but all the bloggers who were interested in a new medium. And so she was very big and very important in the development of Tumblr as a way for people to communicate, particularly for poets. And she's just, as she explains, she's sort of invaded all of these different forms of promoting herself without, and as she explains, you cannot jump into these and say, I'm here to sell you my book. You have to become part of the community and get involved in it. She's also taken on Twitter in a very big way. Again, Twitter is not a way that you can go in and say, I want you to buy my book. But by building yourself a large Twitter following, and even though they say the business side of Twitter might be dead, the actual contact side is still very important in the community, especially among writers. So you just have to sort of jump into this new format. Some people, of course, use Facebook, but with Amanda, she came out with this idea of really focusing on Tumblr. When she had a large enough community of listeners and people reading her work, eventually, and this was just fantastic, she was selected for 2016 as Goodreads Poet of the Year. She got over 25,000 votes, which is a lot of votes. So it means 25,000 people were out there reading her poetry at least, probably closer to a quarter million. When you get that many votes, you have probably only 10% of the readers actually vote for you. So she had this large number of readers. And with that in mind, it just propelled her into a whole new world of being able to approach agents when she had a book together. And so she was very lucky after being very involved in Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and people just falling in love with her books, she got a book deal. And, you know, always when you say you get a book deal, what you mean is you got some money. I mean, this is nice. It's nice that, she got money. So, you know, it's sometimes challenging for all writers. You know, you post your work on Wattpad and on other formats, and you hope that someday something will happen with it. But, of course, part of it is how much energy you put into it. And in this case, Amanda Lovelace put a lot of work into it. I mean, she really, I think she wrote every day on Twitter, every day on Tumblr, and just built up her audience. And this is important because you have to remember that when you're going to launch your book, when you are ready to launch your book, you want to have at least 1,000 people already following you and eager to buy your book, because the best-selling title that you are striving for, whether you want to become an Amazon bestseller or a USA Today bestseller, or if you dream big and you want to be a New York Times bestseller, all of this comes really through the sales in the first few weeks. After that, it really doesn't matter. The books can have a steady sale for years, but it won't propel you into that best-selling category. To get into the best-selling category, you want to be selling, in the first week, at least 1,000 books, minimum. That's for Amazon, and of course for the others, it's much larger. So that's why you need this following, and you need to try to get pre-sales. And so it's really exciting when a poet can get ahead. You know, it's just wonderful. I read her book. It's called The Princess Saves Herself in This One. You know, it's hard to say when a poem will sort of strike you. But her little poems, and it's you know, she's put it into a book and made it, turned it into a book. In some ways, you look at it and you say, oh, that's very, looks very simple, but there's a lot of thought put into this book. And that's why I've just been sort of, she propelled me into thinking in general about poetry. And I'm really thrilled that in January, I'm going to be talking to Amy Belding Brown. Amy Belding Brown wrote a book called Mr. Emerson's Wife. And of course, it is a book about Ralph Waldo Emerson's wife, Lydian, and it examines the whole emotional landscape of love and marriage and what it was like to be married to a poet of Emerson's stature. And of course, at the time he was one of the most famous men in America. And so it's a fascinating story, and I'm so happy that Amy Belding Brown is going to be coming on the program, and we can talk about Emerson's poetry. But the nice thing is all of Emerson's poetry is available to you on the internet. All you have to do is go to Gutenberg. It's all free there, and you can read it. And this might be a good time over the Christmas holidays here and the winter break. Just take a little bit of time and read a poem. There's also a site where you have a poem a day, and it gives you a look into what makes a poem, why poetry still, poems that might be 400 years old, 500 years old, going back, you know, centuries, can still touch your heart and make an impression on you, and actually touch that emotion in you, something that connects. And that's what poetry does. It connects people and connects emotions. And so I would like to recommend everybody have a look at Gutenberg is the best place for all of the old poets, the classic poets. Everything is there. And then meanwhile, you can go to Goodreads and look at the poetry section. And Amanda Lovelace's book, The Princess Saves Herself, in this one is available on Amazon. And I'm going to try to get her to come on the program so she can tell us a little bit more about this, because she has really, she did the work that is really difficult for many of us who have not, did not grow up with all of these new formats of connecting, first of all with readers, and then getting the attention of literary agents. So whether it's Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, putting your poetry, reading your poetry, or having it read on a YouTube video, there are so many ways now to connect to readers and to just get that attention that you need. So that's just one of the things that I want to talk about. I also want to remind everyone that Angela Hunt is going to be on next week, and we're going to be talking. Now, Angela is a fantastic author, local author here in the Clearwater area. She's published 100 books, over 100 books. Quite a few of them are on the subject of writing. And, of course, she's probably best known for her novelization of Risen, the hit movie. And, of course, all of her stories about the women of the Bible. Now, Angela is actually Dr. Angela Hunt. She has a degree in religion. So when she writes about biblical characters, she knows the period, knows the time well, and that's what she brings into her writing. It's just wonderful to read her stories about all of the women of the Bible. And Delilah, I think, was one of my favorites. It's just a fantastic book. And these books are, her books are available at the Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach at Miami Avenue Book Nook. But she's going to be doing a workshop in February, from February 11th to 12th, from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. And breakfast and lunch are provided. It's going to take place at the lovely Holiday Inn and Suites Harborside. They've remodeled it, and it's looking really great. It's a perfect place for a seminar, and right now, until the end of the year, the cost is just $149, which is a really, a real bargain to work with a best-selling author like Angela. And she is telling everyone, bring your work that you're, the current work that you're working on, or just if you're not, haven't started working on something, come there and she will get you started and inspired, because she's a very inspiring person just in her own right. She's a fantastic woman and such an enthusiast about helping other writers get ahead. And so it's right now, as I said, it's $149. You can go to her website, AngelaHuntBooks.com, and register there. And I think you will enjoy it. And I'm, if you're going to stay at the hotel at the Harborside Hotel, the first five people who sign up to stay at the hotel for the night will get upgraded to a suite, which is great. And everybody will get all sorts of materials to help them with their writing, including Angela's Writing Lessons from the Front, which is a great book, also workbooks and all sorts of freebie little things that will help you and that you will enjoy. So that's Angela Hunt's workshop in February. So I hope that you'll all go to her website and have a look at that. Meanwhile, go to my archive page at www.radio-joyonpaper, archive page, where I will have Mark's interview today up, and I will also have one of my favorite people, Katie Price. I'm going to have her interview up this weekend, so you can listen to it. And she is, again, one of these writers who has embraced the new methods of reaching an audience. And so I was so proud when she got onto Wattpad and got lots of readers, and we're going to be hearing a lot more from Katie Price. And you can listen to her interview on my archive page. And again, anybody, if you, there's any authors, I'm looking to fill up my whole schedule for the coming year. If you have any authors, send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to invite them. And if I invite somebody and you want to come in the studio, if I get them, and you want to come in the studio and say hello and talk and ask your own questions, I'll be happy to do that. So meanwhile, just have a very, very Merry Christmas. It's going to be a wonderful weekend here in Florida. And just be loving and kind to everybody. And say Merry Christmas to everybody. And and Hanukkah's starting, too, on Christmas Eve this year, which is rather unusual timing. But happy Hanukkah and Merry Christmas to everybody. Bye now.